Welcome to another episode of Pit Lane Parlay.
Welcome to another episode of Pit Lane Parlay. My name is host Mike Jokum. Matt and Jess are back with me here, and joining us for the first time is the driver of Chip Ganassi's number 10 NTT data car, Ed Jones. Ed, how you doing?
Yeah, I'm great. Thanks, man. Thanks for having me on, and looking forward to it.
Yeah. Thank you for joining us and taking some time out of your, you know, a rare off week. I know you had some work in the simulator this week, so thank you for taking some time. We'll hop right into it. I'll start this week. You know, in the off season, being approached by Chip Ganassi, how quick do you jump at a contract offer by somebody like Chip Ganassi?
Yeah, you know, at the end of the day, it's, you know, what a young driver like myself always is aiming for, what you're dreaming about. So, yeah, as soon as that opportunity came up, you know, I took it as quick as I could and just wanted to make it happen. You know, it's one of those things when you get the call and you just want to know that you just want to get it done and out of the way as quickly as possible. And it's one of those situations where the actual process isn't that long, but it feels like it's forever. You know, it feels like it's far longer than it actually is.
And what was your, you know, was there any hesitation to, you know, joining Ganassi, or was it, you know, there was no thought at all? It was immediately, let me hop on the plane or drive to Chip's office and get this done.
Yeah, no, not at all. You know, I was in Dubai at the time with my family. And yeah, you know, I was thinking about getting on a plane to go and get it sorted, but it was quicker, you know, to do it over email and rather than to be on the plane. So yeah, it was just, you know, as I said, it's one of those opportunities where when it comes up and you have to take it, you have to take it straight away, and just trying to make the most of it now.
Cool, great. I'll turn it over to Matt.
Yeah, thanks for joining us, Ed. I really appreciate you coming on. Kind of recapping this last weekend, I just have the first part of my question is just a little comment. I thought that you had a very underrated drive. I thought you passed a lot of cars, and sitting in turn five, we got to see a bunch of those. That was really cool. Just kind of recap your weekend, see, you know, you finished top 10. You know, how good does it feel to get that top 10 in Road America?
Yeah, it's good. We start off the weekend, it was pretty tough. We were struggling, and first practice wasn't too bad, but the second practice struggled quite a bit. And you know, just finding the balance for myself, and obviously as other teammates experience, you know, the way Scott runs his car is it's quite a unique driving style. So it's hard to just, you know, bolt that on and work from there. So you're still working on things to find what I like. And yeah, I think it wasn't until qualifying when I felt really comfortable with the car. We were, you know, all of a sudden very quick, made it through the first part and into the fast 12. And to be honest, we should have been in the fast 6 on a lap to do it. And I was actually behind Scott at the time. He made a mistake on his previous lap, so I had to back off. And then I caught him again. And, you know, once you get within a two second gap to the car in front around Road America for qualifying, you don't want that because you just lose all the error in the high speed corners. And from, you know, halfway through the lap, well, after 5 corners, I was, you know, 3/10 up on my previous lap, which would have put me comfortably in the fast 6. But then I got too close, and time just kept falling away. So it was really frustrating. You know, we had a lot of potential there. And then at the start of the race, you know, Power had that issue and the whole left lane was just held up. And it was, you know, I think Piggott was in front of me, and both of us were just trying to get in the right lane, but we were just being freight trained, you know, by everyone going past. And yeah, it was difficult. I ended up 17th after the first lap. And at the time, you know, the guys on the timing stand apparently were thinking about, you know, changing strategy up. But I was able to pass quite a lot of cars and get us back up to where we needed to be, and we were able to work the strategy we wanted to be on from there.
Yeah,
you know, it was pretty frustrating because I think if we started, you know, further up or where we probably should have been from qualifying, we would have finished much, much higher up as well.
Sure.
Yeah, to me, it was you and Hinch were probably the two best drivers to watch all day. It just seems like you guys are passing everyone. And then just kind of a second part to that, you know, on the warm-up lap and the cool-down lap, like how cool is it to go around Road America and just see the place just packed with fans?
Yeah, it's great. And I think, obviously, I'm still relatively new to IndyCar, but you know, this is the type of race that the series needs, with, you know, everyone, all the people there, you know, obviously a lot of fans all around the track, but also the fans that you have when you're in the paddock, you know, they know a lot about the sport and what's going on. They have much more insight, and so it's really good to have that engagement and to have people around like that.
Yeah, I say I waved and said hey, but I'm pretty sure you had to get to a meeting, so I didn't want to like bother you too much. But we'll get it over to Jess.
Yeah.
All right. So we've got a holiday coming up, and we're going to pretend that you are hosting a 4th of July party here. So you are going to have a piñata at your party. What would you like your piñata to be stuffed with?
What's a piñata?
A piñata is it's a Mexican tradition at parties, and it's typically filled with candies, and the kids will hit it with a bat and it'll break open.
Okay, actually, yeah, I think I know what you mean. Yeah. So for 4th of July, it's asking something really American, doesn't it? if it's not going to be candy, I'll probably try and get some beef jerky. Yeah, from Marco Andretti Thompson, right?
Yeah. Nice. I don't think I can beat that one unless you fill it with Budweiser.
Yeah.
Good question to start there, Jess. Ed, I'll take it over here. You know, growing up, who were your, you know, racing heroes, whether it be, you know, in Europe or over here in the U.S.? Who did you, you know, look up to growing up?
Yes, there was a lot of drivers, which obviously that I watched. And at the time in Formula One, it would have been, you know, Hamilton, watching him. I'm still, you know, I think people... A lot of people think I'm around the age of, like, a lot older than I actually am. So, yeah, the drivers, I still, when Hamilton was in there, I was still pretty young when he first started in Formula One. In IndyCar, you know, a lot of the guys, it was cool to race against Helio. You know, Montoya, when he, you know, raced a long time ago, initially in IndyCar. And it was cool to see, you know, how Mansell, that was obviously a lot of people, so there's quite a lot of people that aren't hugely keen on him, but I thought it's cool what he did to go from F1 to IndyCar as well, and be successful in both. And I think drivers that are able to succeed in different categories is something which I really admire, and think it, you know, it's very difficult to do.
Yeah, it's cool you bring up Nigel Mansell. Matt and I were talking during the episode last week about, you know, anybody who's finished top five in every oval in a season, only two drivers have ever done it. One was Nigel Mansell, was at 93, and the other was your teammate, Scott, 2008, I think. Yeah. So, yeah, definitely, you know, one of the best drivers of all time. With that, I'll turn it back over to Matt.
Yeah, so we like to get some fan questions here. We had two that kind of asked the same question. We had Jason, who's at JWalker17, and also our buddy George Butts, who is Butts is Nuts 4 on Twitter.
And yes, that's his actual Twitter account.
My last name is Hickey. I can't laugh at anybody. I'm sure, you know, Ed walking around the paddock, maybe a couple people here and there call you too tall, especially since you met just Paul Jones. Mike had brought up how, you know, relatively quickly, or at least we assumed how quickly you signed with Ganassi. Now that you've been there for, you know, half a year and almost a half of a full season at IndyCar, what's kind of the biggest difference from driving with Ganassi versus your rookie season with Dale Coyne Racing?
Yeah, I think, you know, the biggest difference is just it's the size of the team. You know, not just does Ganassi have the IndyCar team, but they have the NASCAR team, the, you know, the Ford GTs as well, and the whole operation is a lot bigger, so it's quite different. I spend a lot more time at the workshop, you know, whether it be at the gym or going through things with the engineer, or just, you know, just to see the mechanics. Whereas with Coin, it wasn't like that as much. The facility was a lot smaller. From outside the track, I think there's a lot more going on with Ganassi. You have more resources to try and prepare for the weekend with, more things to go through, and more time in the simulator and things like that. I think, we're working with the engineers and the team itself. When you're at the racetrack, it's not much different at all. Coin have very high level engineers as well, very successful engineers. When you're working with those guys, it's very similar. You're going through the same processes, more or less. There's always slightly different approaches small differences with each team with how they approach things, which is quite normal. I've seen throughout my career so far. But in general, I think people see Coin as very small, and of course, from the operational stand side, it is much smaller than Ganassi. But the way that you work within the team is pretty similar.
Cool.
That's good insight. We'll turn it over to Jess.
Okay, so what is your spirit animal and why?
My spirit animal? I think, I would say, what would, maybe I would say a cheetah or leopard. I like to go with one of them. Because I think the way I go about things is, I'm probably, I try not to be boasting or walk around like I'm better than everyone else and things like that. And I found that I try to approach it with try to be humble and try and just do the work on the track. And I think a lot of times in the past, people I'll just pop out of nowhere with the results and get up near the front. And I think that's kind of the style I've been. I've always had clean races and like what a cheetah or something like this, where you're hidden and then all of a sudden you'll pop out and grab whatever you need, whether you be at the front. I'd say that.
Awesome.
I like it.
Definitely. I was hoping you'd say Jaguar just so we could hear it said properly.
Jaguar.
Because us Americans can't say it right, apparently.
Yeah, I know. There's a restaurant close to where I live called Jaguar. Everyone else, no one knows what I'm talking about when I say it.
I'm going to go slightly off racing here, but still related to the racetrack. If you have to pick one song to listen to before a race to kind of get in the zone, what song is it?
Yeah, so that changes a lot, and I'll go through different different songs. Recently, I think I had Kanye West Power. I listened to that a few times before the race, or I change it up. But one thing which I like going through my music or albums on my iPhone, because as time's gone on, even through from 2012 or 2013, when I first started racing in cars, I remember which songs I listened to through that time, which races I was in. They change over time, obviously, and I remember a lot of the songs because it reminds me of a certain race or certain part of a season that I was in. So I actually really like that, and it works and helps my memory with certain situations.
Yeah, I mean, I still remember what song I used to listen to sitting in the back of my parents' car driving to hockey rinks when I was 13. I remember what year it was. Definitely understand that. I think the year I listened to this one specific song by some metal band that's no longer in existence was the year we won the championship. So I always liked that song, even though the rest of the album was pretty terrible. But I won't throw them under the bus on the recording here. I'll turn it back over to Matt.
Well, some of them, I actually, funny enough, one, Killing in the Name by, the name of that band?
A Rage Against the Machine.
When I first started doing short oval qualifying, that was the song I put on. Okay, see this one?
Yeah.
That's one of those situations where that's quite a suitable song for that.
I love it. I think we're going to make that our outro music for the episode.
There you go. Yeah, so Ed, I'm a big believer in kind of looking past just the black and white results. And so I just pulled up your results in the year, and I think you've had a very underrated season. I don't think you're getting enough credit for what you're doing, because if I look back at it, because Phoenix, you had the accident, weren't you? I think you were running like second, weren't you?
Yeah, I was running second.
And then Barber and the Grand Prix of Indy, I think you had mechanical issues on both of those.
Yeah.
And then Indianapolis, you had the accident early on there. I mean, that's a double points race, so that's a huge hit. So that obviously score really good. So kind of looking at your season so far, I mean, is it kind of frustrating knowing that, you know, had some things gone right here or there, you could definitely be, you know, sitting fourth, fifth, sixth in the points right now?
For sure. It is a frustrating thing. And as you said, you know, St. Pete was all right. I finished eighth. And then Phoenix, you know, we're running second. I was quite comfortable there. It's just, you know, super frustrating to, you know, to lose a podium like that so early on in the season. And, you know, it was great to have that, you know, to show that already with Ganassi after only our second race, we could be fighting up that, you know, that far up in the field. Fortunately, we got a podium at Long Beach the weekend after. And, you know, like you said, in Barber, we had an engine issue, so I didn't finish that race. Indy Grand Prix, we're on for, you know, we're in the top 10. And then on the last restart, I got two punctures, you know, on the left front and the left rear. And it's like, come on. You know, when the team was like, we've never seen that happen. So, you know, those two races, you know, there wasn't anything we could do that rubbed us off, you know, pretty good results. I think Barber would have been top six. Indy Road Course top 10. Obviously, we had that Indy is a crash, and that was different. But, you know, every race that we've actually finished in or not had an issue, we've been easily in the top 10 and fighting for more. So, the overall, what the season shows right now is a bit annoying, but I'm just trying to focus on, you know, getting some more podiums for the rest of the season and just finish the second half off as strong as I can.
Yeah, I got to feel that. I'll even go further. I'll say that first win is right around the corner. I feel there's definitely some tracks coming up here, especially Iowa and Toronto. I feel like you'll definitely be a dark – well, I wouldn't even call it a dark horse. I think you're definitely a contender there. So we'll pass it over to Jess.
Okay, let's see. So you are going to host a dinner party.
And Ed's hosting a lot of parties.
I'm hosting a lot of parties, aren't I?
He likes to party, okay?
All right, that's cool.
So he's hosting a dinner party, and you get to invite three people, any three people, dead or alive, anybody you want. Who would you pick?
Well, also, if I'm hosting a party, I'd probably pass it on to my, you know, my old sponsor. I used to have it called 11. Yes.
Yeah.
They could probably host it for me. I was there, went to see the guys last night, actually. But, so if I was to do that, it would be, who would I pick? So Mike Tyson, for sure. Amy Winehouse, that'd be pretty cool.
Okay.
Really?
And who's the last one? We gotta have a good one, don't we?
Those are good.
Yeah, no, I gotta think of one who would go well with that. I don't know, probably the ruler from UAE, Sheikh Mohammed. You know, growing up when I was in Dubai, obviously it's, I don't know if you guys have seen, but it's changed from being nothing to all of a sudden it's a massive city. And just someone, you know, it took a lot of vision to create a place like that, so yeah, quite like different it. People, but I'm not sure how it would work. But
I'm sure Club 11 could make it work. I went there once,
exactly,
a couple of years
ago. Really?
When I was in town for work. So I have been there.
It's a good workspace, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't work there. I went there after a long day.
Yeah, I know. I'm joking.
My old boss, if he listens to this, might be like, "What was he doing all day down there?"
Yeah, he's gonna be on either.
Yeah. all right. So back to racing. Your teammate just the other day, I think it was Monday, said that he thinks there needs to be some changes to the front wing configuration on these permanent road courses, you know, like a Barber, like a Road America, to improve the racing even more. Do you agree, disagree, think it should stay the same? What are your thoughts on Scott's comments?
Yeah, I agree with that. We talked about it briefly after the race, and just the way that end fence is designed is that, you know, it gets very disrupted by dirty air. You're relying a bit too much, you know, too much on it. And you know, if they can tweak it, you know, make some changes to make it easier to follow in dirty air, it's going to improve the racing even more. Obviously, we've seen when it's been like tight tracks, you know, twist tracks where it's not too high speed, the racing has been amazing. But I think, in my opinion, the correlation has been is the faster the track has been, the harder or the worse the racing has been. And so because of that, you know, for sure it's linked to the end fence or the front wing, and if they can do something to fix it, I'm 100% behind it.
Yeah, good answer. Similarly, the, you know, IndyCar already said that they would be changing the options for the front wing for Pocono next month. Do you think that was the right call? Do you think it's going to help the racing?
Yeah, I think it will.
Cool. Matthew?
Which was massive. Yeah.
Okay, so not to put you on the spot per se, but silly season's kind of in full swing, and I think the hot topic right now is undoubtedly McLaren. What's your kind of take on McLaren potentially slash almost certainly coming to IndyCar next year, and even the rumblings about your current teammate Scott Dixon potentially being approached by McLaren for that seat?
Yeah, I don't know anything, you know, about that part, but on the other side, you know, having McLaren join IndyCar is, you know, fantastic for the series. It's a huge brand, huge history in motorsport, and it's only going to be positive. And again, it's adding to the car count. I think, you know, how many cars are we could be close to, you know, 26, 27, or 28 cars next year. And for a top level series, that's really impressive. And it's crazy how much IndyCar, well, how much better IndyCar is getting. And obviously, since I joined, even last year, you know, the grid's already increased, and it looks like it's going to increase by quite a bit more next year. And no matter, I don't know which drivers will be there, but I'm sure that they're going to have competitive people and add some more, you know, competitiveness to the front of the grid.
Yeah, because one of my complaints about last couple, ever since they introduced the DW12, it seems like either more and more teams were leaving, and then the only way the grid was getting bigger was just, you know, a Penske adding a fourth car, or Ganassi adding two more cars, things like that. So to have, you know, like you said, I think the rumor going around is probably 26 to 28 cars between Harding, maybe McLaren adding one to two, Meyer Shank maybe going more races, Yunkos full time.
And that Corsa team as well.
Yeah, of course. They're at least Indy, but definitely looking full time. So, and I think Rob Miller said today or yesterday, potentially 36 to 38 cars at Indy, which would be fantastic. It's not going to make your life any more comfortable on bump day, but it's going to be interesting to see for the fans. So, we'll turn it back.
That's great.
Oh, go ahead.
All right, Jess, I think you're up.
Okay, so I guess this is kind of a two-part question. Are you a reader at all? Do you like to read?
Well, not particularly. I can't say. I'm still stuck on the book, same book I started in, like, 2011. But,
One page at a time. You got to start small. Okay, yeah. So then what is that book? What have you been reading for so long?
It was actually Mike Tyson autobiography.
Okay.
Yeah, it's just, I don't know why. I kind of read the same thing over and over again, even though I haven't completed it. It's one of the things, I'll carry a book around with me, like, all over the place, like, thinking I'm going to read it, and then I never get around to it.
Yeah, I tend to do that as well. I have a book that I've been meaning to get to for probably the last 2 years. Of every time I get on an airplane, I look at it and then I fall asleep.
Yeah.
Usually how it works.
Yeah. All right. So, Ed, do you have any pre-race superstitions?
No, not superstitions. The only thing I do is I always get in the car from the same side. I don't think that's a superstitious thing. I think I'm just used to it. It's just more comfortable to do it. But that's the only thing I do.
Okay. Simple enough. Yeah, and I understand. I'll turn it right back over to Matt.
Yeah, so the news came out this week that Phoenix would not be on the schedule next year, which, I don't know, as we talked about earlier, it's got to be kind of a bummer for you since you ran second there last year before the incident. So with that, there's been a bunch of names being thrown out as far as, like, Homestead, which I didn't – did you do an Indy Lights test there?
That was my first ever test day on the oval.
Oh, nice. Yeah. So Homestead, Kentucky, a Nashville street race, maybe one more in Canada. Where do you kind of, I don't know how many North American tracks you've been around to, but is there like a certain track in North America you'd like to see IndyCar get to?
Ovals or just in general?
Just ovals in general. So yeah, hopefully, because I think Kentucky would be a pretty solid, or Homestead. I think Homestead's probably the leading right now, especially since
Homestead's the only one. I don't know the others that we haven't raced at really well. So, yeah, it's hard for me to judge, but it'd be cool to do a Homestead race. I've been based in Miami for a long time up until this year, so it'd be kind of like a home race for me.
Perfect. All right, we'll get it back to Jess.
Okay, so I'm gonna ask my my infamous question now.
Another party.
I'm going to give I'm going to give you a 400-pound block of mozzarella cheese. Okay. What are you going to do with it?
Well, I'm not allowed to have dairy, so it's kind of a sad ending there.
He's going to give it to Club 11, part of that part.
He's going to get rid of it as fast as he can.
one of my favorite things is mozzarella sticks. So maybe I have to try them. Even though I'm not meant to have dairy, I'll probably try and get someone to make those for me.
I like it. Yeah, I think I had mozzarella sticks for dinner tonight at the bar. Yeah, I don't mean to brag, but... So, you know, you're 2 years with Carl in Indy Lights. How vital to your, you know, current IndyCar career do you think Indy Lights and in general the Mazda Road to Indy is for up-and-coming drivers?
I think it was really important for me to do that, especially where it depends, again, what series you've been racing in before. I was still pretty young and... I'd never driven an oval, so it was a perfect opportunity for me to learn that racecraft and learn most of the circuits as well. And I really struggled on the ovals, my first two ovals in Indy, first two ovals in Indy Lights. And then since that oval, in the first year, since the first two ovals, I finished in the podium in every single one I did. So, it was great for me to learn and get comfortable on them. I was really comfortable by the end of it. So, that's a huge thing. And ovals is all about confidence. And if you can gain that, then you're going to be good on them. As soon as you lose that confidence, it's very difficult. Also learning the tracks. America is very different to Europe on that part, in the sense that in Europe, learning a track is very easy in Europe because you tend to go there on the first few laps, you just go way over the limit. You use all the extra runoff and then you just back it down a bit. In the States, you can't do that. You know, if you try to do that, learn it the same way you learn a European track, you're going to be in the wall by turn two. So you have to, build up to it a lot more. And so actually I feel like the learning process of a circuit in America, it actually takes a bit more time and it's much more difficult to learn it. And the tracks more remind me of when I first raced in England, like Brands Hatch or Thruxton or tracks like that, where there's not as much margin for error and it's harder to learn and to get right.
Along this,
but then within, yeah. So then from the Master Road to Indy, you've seen a lot of drivers come through there. And fortunately, after winning the championship, I got the scholarship to move up. And it gave me, you know, I was, again, also lucky with the ride that was available at Coin and to be partners with Sebastian, which gave me, you know, the experience and provided me the opportunity to get the results I needed for being with Ganassi this year.
Great, yeah. And along the same lines, you know, from last year to this year, I think this was actually a fan question by our buddy George Butts as well. But I don't remember. I didn't write it down here. You know, do you feel, you know, more confident and ready last year versus this year in terms of, you know, racecraft, setting up the car on a weekly basis, kind of the whole feel of, you know, how a race weekend goes, the different tracks and whatnot? Do you feel, you know, can you tell there's a big difference last year versus this year now that you've been to just about, you know, every track except, I guess, Portland, you know, at least once or twice now?
Yeah, that helps a lot. I think the biggest thing is knowing what to expect from each session and what really counts. You know, you can, after learning last year, FP1, obviously, it's good to get going well, but, you know, just understanding what you need from the car, what part of the weekend in order to be, you know, to end up with a good race, because obviously that's the only thing that matters. And yeah, just learning how to go about it, how to approach things in a better way. And you know, with having, you know, longer races, pit stops, different tire compounds, all of that was very new for me last year.
Sure.
So just the experience of that has been very helpful. And as I said, just knowing more what targets I needed for each session of the weekend, what race weekend, and on, you know, just the different circumstances.
Great answer. Thank you for the info. Matt, it's over to you.
So it's something you actually kind of touched on with your last answer that I'm kind of curious to kind of get a driver's point of view on it. As far as you're talking about track limits in the States versus kind of in Europe, what is your kind of stance on kind of like Herman Tilk design tracks in Formula One, or just kind of the European trend of more tarmac runoff and, you know, less gravel, dirt, or concrete walls, as far as it goes, you know, from a pure driving standpoint versus safety?
Yeah, you know, you want things to be safe, of course. You don't want anyone to get hurt, that's for sure. But the same, you know, with the way off, you want it to be challenging in the sense that if you make a mistake, you get punished for it, right? And so that's why I think the American tracks are much more challenging, much more difficult. Of course, I enjoyed racing on the tracks in Europe with the runoff as well. There's some, you know, awesome tracks in Europe with, you know, most of the surfaces are very smooth. So when I first came to the States, it was just crazy how bumpy everything was. So, you know, some of the tracks would be nice if they're a bit smoother. I think Iowa next weekend is going to be pretty significantly bumpy even than last year. But, you know, in general, that's just the way it is. You know, I wouldn't say I prefer one over the other. Like, ultimately, of course, there's tracks from both Europe and America, which I prefer over others. It'd be nice, ideally, to have a mixture of all of them. But if it's just going to be one, definitely the American tracks.
Nice. And kind of on top of that, after, like, Detroit and Long Beach, did like Dale Coyne or does Chip Ganassi like pay for like a chiropractor to come into the office after those races?
Not quite. Actually, in Detroit, yeah, actually, always on a straight circuit. For some reason, the first practice session, my forearms get pretty bound up because you always hold on harder on that first session. It's so bumpy. But after that, the rest of the weekend's usually pretty, well, it was fine.
Nice. Yeah. All right, Jess, go ahead.
Me and at the end of the race, me and Powell were on the podium. We were complaining about our heads were hurting so much because we were just on the straights, you were smashing your head from the bumps, and it actually gave you a bit of a headache. But otherwise, it was okay.
All right, go ahead, Jess.
Okay, so most of the time, people are going to ask you what your favorite movie is. But I want to know what movie you cannot stand.
That's quite a difficult question, but because usually if I don't like a movie, I'm just going to turn it off straight away. But I don't know, Scary Movie was probably one of those which I just thought, what is the point of this? Yeah, that wasn't a great one.
I don't like that one either. I know most people do, and people are probably going to say mean things to me on Twitter now, but I'm not a fan.
It happens anyways, so.
Yeah.
Good point. And putting in my own input here, speaking of movies, and I know one of our followers is in production somehow on the Star Wars movie. I admittedly have never ever seen a single minute of a Star Wars movie. I know that probably blows everybody's mind, but I think Jess, you haven't either. But
I just don't care for them.
Okay, yeah. See, I've never even seen it.
Yeah, Ed, I don't know these two people. I'm sorry.
So I guess it's my question here. Speaking of Iowa, as a smaller oval, does Phoenix give you any sort of indication and confidence on what setup you want to run and how you're feeling going into the weekend? Or because it's a little bit of a bumpier track, is it doesn't quite translate?
Yeah, to be honest, it's completely different. And of course we were good in Phoenix, but it doesn't really it doesn't translate to Iowa for us, in the sense that the track is just so bumpy. I think we tried to test there last month or the month before, and it rained 2 days before and it still didn't stop drying because the weepers were coming out. There's quite a few issues there. The track surface was a lot bumpier even than last year's, what it looked like. So just because of that, it's going to be really, you got to really work on the damping and getting the car to ride well over the bumps, and that's going to be critical for having a good car around there. Of course, I'd like it to us to be as competitive there as we were at Phoenix, but unfortunately, I think it's going to require a very different approach. And I'm sure we can get that sorted out. I think a few guys are testing there today, so yeah, we'll see.
Cool, Matt.
I'm sure Team Penske will let you guys in on some secrets there, right? Is that how that works?
Yeah.
One more fan question here. Our buddy James Alban, who's at the King of Swing on Twitter, he wants to ask Ed here, has anybody in the paddock ever come up to you and called you Indiana Jones?
I don't think they have, to be honest. I was thinking for one of my years that first years at Indy, actually, I was thinking about doing an Indiana Jones suit, but I didn't quite get around to it.
Have you ever seen the picture of Marco Andretti in 2008 at the Indy 500? His car was a Blockbuster sponsored car that year, and so he had the Indiana Jones fire suit and the hat, and then his car.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
I'll have to send
you a picture on Twitter of Indiana Jones.
Yeah.
Fire suit. He had the brown hat. He had the car.
Yeah.
Tony Kanaan hated it because he wrecked Kanaan in the Indy 500 that year.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'll have to send you a picture of that on Twitter. So maybe we can get you in that get up again. We'll see here.
I'd have to try and run it for Texas next year.
Yes,
and
then, absolutely.
Then if you win the race, then it'd only be fitting that everyone let me win so I could have a hat and a gun to make it look good.
I'll send you a picture of that on Twitter.
Yeah, I love it. I think that's an automatic win. Every driver should just pull over.
Yeah, exactly.
Jess, we'll wrap it up with one more from you and one more from me, and then we'll let Ed go.
Okay, so are you a fan of roller coasters? And if so, what's your favorite one?
I'm not a huge fan. I haven't actually been on many. I think it's one of those things that I think quite a few other drivers are similar, in the sense that we like going fast and doing whatever when you're in control, but when I'm not in control of it, I'm not so keen. even if another racing driver, if I'm the passenger and they're driving, I don't like it at all. It's one of those things that I like to be in control, and roller coasters aren't my favorite thing.
Yeah, man. Gotcha. I'm not a fan either.
I hate roller coasters, so don't worry.
Yeah, I don't think I've been on a roller coaster in about 15 years, and I'm pretty sure that's the reason why I wasn't invited to the in-laws trip to Disney at the end of the year this year, because I don't do rides.
Or Jess's trip to Disney.
Yeah, well, yeah, either or. All right.
That's okay. I'm going to meet his in-laws at Disney.
So. Yeah, they can have a good time on the roller coasters, and the rest of us can go to Club 11. I think we have a perfect winter plan there. All right, Ed, again, thank you very much for joining us tonight. It's been great. I appreciate it, and you know, good luck at Iowa and the rest of the season. I'm sure you'll see at least me around the track a handful of times, come up and say hello, and you know, thank you again. So last question is probably a relatively easy one versus all the crazy questions we've asked tonight. What is it like learning and working alongside of, you know, Scott Dixon? How beneficial is it to learn from somebody who, you know, is probably one of the top 3 to 5 drivers of all time?
Yeah, it's a huge opportunity for me. I've been trying to learn as much as I can, doing everything I can to, you know, get up to his level. It's given me a lot of confidence that, you know, there's been a few races where I've been able to do that this year, but you know, most of the time it's just, you know, trying to get there, and it can be a bit off-putting sometimes when, you know, when the car's not feeling good, we're both struggling, and he just pulls it out the bag even when, you know, things aren't going great. And you know, there's just certain things he does in some of the corners which you're just like, how does he do that? So you know, it's just trying as hard as I can to study what he does, and try to do that myself. So he's very relaxed in you know, when we're working together, but he's obviously very focused, and he's, you know, it's cool that, you know, he's quite late in his career now, but at the same time he's super determined to be at the front, and you can see he's doing everything he can to get that 5th championship. And it's great to be partnered along. We're trying to, you know, work as hard together to, you know, bring the team up forward even more, and hopefully we can be on the podium together a few times as the season goes on.
Cool. Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. And you know, again, thank you for joining us. Best of luck throughout the rest of the season. We'll let you go now and enjoy your off weekend, and good luck you know, starting in Iowa.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Thanks, everyone, Ed.
Thank
Cheers,
you.
Cheers, you too. Bye.
All right, guys. So we have another, you know, 15 or 20 minutes here to wrap up the episode. Again, thank you to SoundCue Audio for their continued support. Pretty soon, in the next couple weeks here, if you order headphones off of SoundCue's website and use promo code PitLaneParlay, you'll get entered into a drawing to win 2 Pit and Paddock passes, in addition to getting some awesome headphones. So moving on here, you know, thank you again to Mr. Ed Jones for joining us for the first, I don't know, what was that, 45 minutes or so. Not too much before we wrap up with the pitfalls, but one topic I did want to debate that Matt brought up to Ed, and is kind of the topic in the news this week, is Phoenix's removal from the 2019 IndyCar schedule. Let's take a debate here, or a vote here, on one track that you think should replace and potentially why, or if your reasoning is just nostalgia, that's cool. You know, Matt, I have to put you on the spot first.
Yeah, I don't know if my answers are realistic per se. The unrealistic answer and hope would be Montreal, the Circuit Gilles Villeneuve. I think that would be a phenomenal race. I know a bunch of drivers are pushing that. Maybe more of the realistic answer, kind of like we touched on, I think Homestead would be cool. I also think this street race in Calgary, with Hinchcliffe and his co-owner Rick Peterson kind of trying to figure it out, I think that'd be really cool. I think that both events, or I think the Calgary event could really take off as far as crowd goes. I think The Homestead one is just more of a, we need to fill an oval slot. And then the Montreal one is just kind of in my dreams. So what do you think, Jess?
So I like your in your dreams pick, because I've actually been to that track and it is amazing.
Yes,
so
I've walked it too.
Yeah, I would love to see Indigo there, and you better believe that I would be there if they did. Homestead would be sweet for me because I live in Florida now. So I would also be there. And if we're going with just a fill an oval slot, you know, I would love to see Kentucky or Chicago come back. Obviously, Chicago there the last few years didn't have a great crowd, but I think now with the way things are trending with IndyCar, I think they could get a good crowd going again. Kentucky always had a decent crowd, and it was a nice track. It's just unfortunate that there isn't a whole lot of hotels and things there super close, so that's kind of the drawback on that one. But it's going to be really interesting to see what takes over.
Yeah, great answers. I'm going to throw one more in there. I think Calgary would be awesome. It's a city I've never visited, so I would definitely love to check it out. I've heard amazing things about Montreal, so that would be pretty cool. Another Canadian city, you know, for the most part would be fantastic, especially with, you know, Wickens rise this year in IndyCar. But my addition is going to be Richmond, purely from a selfish, it's probably the closest from a driving standpoint outside of Pocono, obviously, for me. And I'm saying that without any research, but I can't imagine it's more than 5 or 6 hours from Pennsylvania here. And it always produced some pretty good races. I know the crowds weren't great, especially the last couple years, common theme there, but the times are different now in IndyCar, so hopefully, you know, we'd get a lot of these Northeast fans that I've talked to and that I've seen at Pocono make the drive down to Richmond as well. Is there any other news we need to cover before we get to our pitfalls?
We could do real quick as far as this rumored second Harding car.
Yes.
Mike, before I get to that, let me just point out real quick that if anybody's curious, Danica Patrick's favorite yoga pose is the handstand. Mike, do you see the second Harding car happening before the season is over?
Yeah, I mean, I'm gonna guess and say yes, because it's not the first time we've heard this. It's definitely the loudest, I guess, we've heard it. But you know, it was talked about all the way back in May and in Indy off and on. You know, I saw whoever wrote that article, I forget if it was Marshall Pruitt or somebody at Racer, mentioned one of the Indy Lights guys potentially, you know, getting the ride, but not limited to the Indy Lights guys. Although I think it would be awesome if it was somebody like Pato O'Ward or my dude Pato. I'm pulling for him to get that second ride at the end of the year. Or maybe a Yunkos ride if they need to fill out another race at the end of the year. But second Harding car, I'm going to go with yes, most likely. Obviously, nothing's definite until it's signed on the dotted line in racing. But I'd say yes, yeah, it's definitely going to happen. My vote would be Pato, but I could see somebody like, not necessarily Santino Ferrucci again, but somebody kind of, you know, in that F1 reserve driver mold, making a one-off IndyCar appearance.
I was referring to your boy Santi.
Well, you know, if it's him, you know, I wish him the best of luck.
Crashed
it. But yeah, you know, I don't think he, you know, he did not have a great weekend in Road America this weekend, and my dude Pato was obviously very frustrated at that. You guys follow him on social media, you would know why. The video is pretty evident, but we'll just leave it at that. You know, I know Pato was a little frustrated afterwards, but Jess, what do you think?
Do I think it's gonna happen? I'm kind of 50-50 still. We've heard a lot of talk but haven't really seen anything yet to necessarily back it up. As far as who would I like to see in it, man, that's hard. I mean, Pato would be good, a good fit. And like you said, I honestly think they would maybe lean more toward, like you said, somebody in the F1 test driver type position. Or gosh, I don't know. This seems to be the year of the left field driver. So maybe we've not even thought about. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see. I think that it would obviously be a really good thing for them, especially if they want to have two cars, you know, full time later. I think that they need to start working on it.
Yeah, I think at most it'll probably just be Sonoma, although in an ideal world, maybe, you know, the last couple races of the year. But, you know, if it's the last couple races of the year, it's probably not going to be an Indy Lights guy because of their schedule. So, Matt, any thoughts?
Yeah, I was kind of just trying to think of some guys in my head. First of all, as if it's going to happen, I don't know, Mike Harding seems like a really guns a blazing kind of guy.
Yeah.
Really just like, you know, I'm not doubting the business side of it, but it's like, you know, it went from, you know, not having a team to having a team and having, I think like Little Al and Barnhart wasn't there yet, but I feel like there's someone else that was kind of well known that was there. And then all of a sudden they were part-time and then all of a sudden they were full-time. And I feel like it all happened really quick. And so I feel like if there's a guy who's aggressive enough to make it happen, it might be Mike Harding. As far as who is going to be the driver, just thinking in my head as far as recent like guys, so not anybody in the field this year. I think guys like R.C. Enerson or Dean Stoneman would be two guys I'd like to see mix it up in IndyCar again for Enerson and for the first time for Stoneman. I know Stoneman was actively looking in the off season, so I don't know where he's at nowadays, and I know Enerson is working on something for next year, so hopefully it happens. That'd be pretty cool either, you know, just the entry itself, and then I'd just be curious to see who got the seat.
Yeah, shout out to again SoundQ Audio, who is working with RC Enerson to try to get a car, if not at the end of this year, next year. I think we mentioned that a couple months back, but yeah, all right, let's jump into the pitfalls here. And, you know, again, make sure to listen to the show on wildfireradio.com on Fridays, or find it on your favorite podcast app. And thank you to all the new international listeners we have gained over the last couple of weeks in Sweden, Japan, the UK, and there was one other country that I was looking at earlier that had a bunch of downloads last week. So, you know, thank you from wherever you're listening. And Jess, I'll let you start it off.
And guys, keep your lug nuts tight.
Nope, that's not how you have to do the pitfall, Jess.
Oh, jeez, pitfall. I'm so sorry.
We're going to leave that in the episode soon.
I was going to say, we're not taking over that. We give Mike enough about some of this.
Oh, my God. Oh, that's great. I think I need to go to bed. Anyway, pitfall. I am so sorry. My pitfall tonight is not actually good. It's weird. You guys are going to be thrown off. So, and obviously I'm thrown off, so it's all good. So my pitfall is going to be actually a positive thing. It's not going to be pitfalling somebody. What? My pitfall, yeah, I know. So, usually I am complaining, and I have complained several times about how the fans and teams or people in racing in general are not being a family or a team, and we're fighting against each other, and it's ugly for whatever reason each week. So this week, I have to praise the racing family and fans for coming together to honor Jason Johnson, who passed away on Saturday evening during a race. I've seen every type of driver you can imagine, NASCAR, NHRA, IndyCar, obviously USAC, have nothing but good things to say. And I appreciate everybody coming together for somebody. So I am not pitfalling anybody because I'm so happy that everybody came together to pay their respects and, you know, do fundraisers and just be there for Bobby and Jax. And I think it's an amazing thing.
Very, very well said. And, you know, our condolences go out to Jason Johnson and his family. We'll leave that one at that. I'll step in here. I'm going to pull it up. I'm not even going to bother pulling up the exact quote. The man who runs, can you send me that link here while I'm chatting? The guy who runs the F1 French Grand Prix. One little side note before I get into that, the track with all those crazy blue lines instead of gravel runoff, is enough to give me a migraine. But anyway, the main problem fans were saying was that, it took them about 4 to 6 hours to get into the track, due to crazy traffic, which really is pretty much, I don't know, unacceptable anywhere you go. And then offered absolutely no apology. And even went as far as his last name is Estrosi, he's a little, I would say he's drinking his own Kool-Aid for two reasons. First off, he said, it's not arrogance. It's not being full of oneself. I say it as it is. Well, okay, Mr. Estrosi, you claim that you had 400 million viewers on TV. So if 30,000 spectators have a bad time, he's not that concerned, because that means 399,970,000 people saw a great sporting event. There's a lot wrong with this comment. This one got me all sorts of fired up the other day when I saw it. First off, as much as I would love all forms of motorsport to be doing well, I'm pretty sure if you combine the NASCAR viewership, the IndyCar viewership, the F1 TV numbers, we're not getting 400 million. That would be pretty cool, but I'm pretty sure that's not correct. I don't even know what the numbers are, because math is not my strong suit, but I don't think we're anywhere close to 100 million just this season, let alone 400 million. So, and second off, if you're going to turn away the 30,000 people that showed up for race day or for practice days, if it took you 6 hours to get in on a practice day, that means people are excited to go. And now you have to sit in a car for 6 hours. I saw people tweet online that they just decided to go home because they were tired of sitting in queue to get into the race, using my Ed Jones European lingo there. Now, if all these people can't get in and they're angry and annoyed and you come out and say something like this, don't be surprised when nobody comes next year and then in 2 years when your race is off the calendar because F1 realizes nobody wants to go. So kind of just poor answer all around. Not definitely a way to drive away fans instead of bringing in fans. But I'll leave it at that and let Matt turn it off before we actually sign off the episode.
Yeah, real quick, that's just, I think or at least if you're drinking at home or if you happen to bring something to work, I'm not condoning it, but if you happen to bring something to work, my new drinking term on the show should be elitist F1 attitude.
Yes.
So if you have any something handy or even if it's water, just take a quick drink. It just seems like another one of those elitist F1 attitudes. Before I get to my pitfall real quick, just want to say two things. First, thanks to Ed Jones for joining us again. That was a fantastic interview. Really nice guy. Feel free to approach him in the paddock. Super approachable guy. The second part is that we did do our Twitter poll about the Ed Carpenter Oval Specialist, and over 50% of you were in alignment with the I think it was myself and Jess and, well, Jess sort of, and Christian kind of, about Ed Carpenter being an oval specialist. And so for the first time in a long time, Mike took an L. So
it happens.
It does happen every now and then. But thanks for those who actually did chime in one way or the other. We do appreciate hearing your feedback on our social media, which is at Pit Lane Parlay, P-A-R-L-E-Y. My pitfall goes out to the fans who are hating on Alexander Rossi after Road America. Sato was knocked off by Rossi after a pit stop. I believe they're fighting for position, and Wickens was on the first lap. Same turn, turn six. Pretty similar incidents. Rossi basically stuffed it on the inside when he was, had about a half car length next to the car, knocked them both off. Looked pretty inadvertent. It looked just like really hard, tight racing, and those kind of things are going to happen. And Sato and Wickens are making a stink about it after the race. And, I think that's fair. I think that, if I was in the same position, I'd be a little upset too. But the fans who are getting mad at Rossi for going for it and for, racing these guys hard, I would do the same thing. I would do the same thing over and over again. And Rossi has shown in the past that he's not a forgiving driver, and he's going to push you to the edge, and he's not going to back down. And especially if you got a warning after doing with the Wickens, maybe I might take it a little easier. And if he does again after Sato and still doesn't get a penalty, then, I'd do it all day long. If nothing's going to stop me, then what's the point? It can come down to, drivers aren't going to respect him as much and maybe race him. Maybe I'm more unfair in the future as far as maybe blocking goes and whatnot. But, I think Rossi not only has been insanely quick this year, his driver rating and my scale is excellent, but he's just been a blast to watch in his aggressiveness. So I didn't really like all the fans who were going after him again for like the fourth or fifth time this year. I think he's adding tremendous value to the series. And having that one guy who's going to be kind of a nemesis to others is something that IndyCar has been severely lacking here recently, since Sage got off the grid in 2016.
15.
Well, he was on 15, so 16.
Sorry, yeah.
So ever since then, I really haven't had like a villain per se.
Yeah, I was thinking about, the Sage versus Ed Carpenter, Iowa finger flipping debate the other day. And I think it's definitely not a bad thing for a new car. I think Jim Aiello at IndyStar wrote something similar the other day. There's no reason to pile on to Rossi. I don't think what he did was necessarily dirty or ill-mannered. Was it aggressive? Yeah, sure. But listen, he has every right to fight for position and, battle. I have no problem with that. He didn't do anything super dirty. He didn't cut anybody off or block or anything like that. He raced hard and, he gives space when needed, but he also races everybody hard and doesn't want to give an inch. And there's nothing wrong with that. And him not wanting to back down from that after the race, I personally don't have any problems with that. I think it's pretty cool that he's, standing up for himself instead of just bending over and apologizing to everybody. So I'll leave it at that. Jess, agree or disagree?
I'm torn on this. I think that Rossi could have been a little less aggressive, but at the same time, if he gives up too much, then, he could fall back several places. So I'm kind of torn on the issue. So I'm not attacking him on social media like all these fans have been. But I think there's a little room for improvement from both sides. The people who are getting, pushed out of the way, so to say, and also from Rossi.
And we'll make that our Twitter poll of the week. Are you on Rossi's side or are you against Rossi there? And with that, Jess, we can actually sign off the episode this time.
Are we sure this time though, for real?
We're positive. Thank you everybody for listening and see you next week.
And guys, keep your lug nuts tight.